Okay, so today's daf in Masechet Pesachim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf chof. Wowie. Whew, looks like we're getting to the end of this very, very complex and involved and wonderful sugya of Reb Chanina's Gan HaKohanim. And so we were in the middle of talking about the second case, which we had spoken about yesterday, Reb Chanina's Gan HaKohanim, and he was talking about the machat. And if you found a machat, we got into a question, what was the machat tame from? That this machat is metame, the bosar, but it's not metame, the goof of the coin. And it's not metame, the sakin. And the last thing that we learned was that as far as the chiddush is concerned of Rabbi Chanina's Gan HaKohanim, namely that the azora is considered to be rishus harabim, and therefore a suffix tuma would be lakula, even though Lechora, that doesn't follow, because anything that Inbo Dat Bishael is considered to be Lukula. However, it turns out that the other aspect of the Chiddush is that something that's being handled by a human being, and even if it's not in his hand, it's on the ground, but the Suffolk came about through the movement and intervention of a human consciousness, that is considered to be Yeshbo Dat Lishael. It's exactly the same as Yeshbo Dat Lishael, and therefore the concepts of Tuma apply to it that we learn from Seita. And of course, the issue over here is that Tuma is fundamentally, deeply, profoundly connected to the idea of Da'at, which is the name of the entire Seder Tyrus, is Da'at in the Pusik. So we'll have to be talking more about that maybe on Hanukkah, for Hanukkah Shir, because it's very Nogea, the elements of Tuma V'Tyra. Anyway, now the question is, the other shayla that we have, is until now we've been speaking about the various dargas of Tuma. However, we haven't explained how it is that this bosser is going to be Mekabel Tuma, because there's another issue. The other issue is, where was their Hechsher? The reason it was so confused about where is their Hechsher is because, gosh, we just got finished talking about the din, about the special halachas in the Beis HaMikdash, about Mashkin, and that those Mashkin are Dechan. And we said not only are they Dechan in the sense that they're not Mekabel Tuma, but they're also Dechan in the sense that they're not even Mashir Lekabel Tuma. Now that leads us to some concern over here. So explain to me. You're telling me, okay, the Bosser is telling me because there was Machat, a Machat in the Bosser. But a Bosser, remember, is not considered to be an Eichlin until such time as it's exposed to Mashkin. And therefore, the question is, where were the Mashkin? Hi, Bosser, dis kasher b'mai. Explain to me what it was that made it possible for this Bosser to become Tomei. I mean, I understand that your assumption is that normally there's going to be, I mean, even you buy in a butcher shop, you buy meat, it's always covered with liquid. It has blood, mixed blood, water, whatever, but that would be enough. But the dam that came from the Shechita would be enough to be give it a din of Eichlin because of Heksha, right? That's not true. Because in this case, since we're talking about a korban, didn't Reb Chiya bar Avraham Reb Yochanan say that dam kochim bichlal is not machshir? Now remember, we had this idea of the unique quality of dam kochim, is that since the comparison of dam to mayim is in terms of dam chalalim yishteh, and that is related to lo tochlenu ala aretz tishpachenu kamayim, so blood that is similar to water is like water, which means that dam shen nishpach kamayim, if you would pour the blood out as if it has no particular meaning, then that's machshir. But then that means that dam kochim, where the whole point of the shechita was the collection of the blood in a kos in order to be zorek the dam, it's absurd to say that al aretz tishpachenu kamayim would refer to dam kochim. So she'eno nishpach kamayim, the Torah is going out of its way. I mean, what else is the point? The tishpachenu kamayim, who cares about tishpachenu? But the point is that if it's not nishpach kamayim, so then it is not machshir like mayim. All right, so you'll say, fine, okay, so maybe it was through the water that we used before we spoke about it in the Beit HaMikdash. We always use water to wash off the basar. I suppose that it's still wet. And that's what you're talking about. This kasher, b'mashke beit mitpachaya. But of course, that brings us to the other problem. Because I'm Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, mashke beit mitpachaya, lo dayan shein dechan. It's not enough that they're not going to be mekabel tuma. They are not even considered to be mashkin, to be machshir something, to be mekabel tuma. Okay, now this, how this interrelates with the sugya before, where there certainly was one approach that we were referring to the water that was on the ground, Afka wouldn't be mekabel to a mikvah as a din of a mikvah. Fine, some learn that we're ignoring that, and this sugya doesn't agree with that sugya. Others explain that there's a difference between the two, but it, again, it's a little bit beyond what we ought to be dealing with here in the context of the daf. And we do know that there was definitely, according to certainly one of the approaches, that it's bichlal, not even nogea. The rabbanon, it's actually halacha l'bashem min Sinai. So the idea over here is that there's no din of heksher. So, okay, says the Gemara, maybe that's the answer. The question is the answer. The reason that we're dealing with the special case over here is because we're dealing with a carbon in the Beis HaMikdash. But a carbon in the Beis HaMikdash makes it susceptible to a whole different halacha that we used yesterday to say that even things that are not foodstuffs are the equivalent of muksher as a foodstuff. We talked about even the burnt coals. We talked about the ketoret and so on. And what did we call that? Chibat HaKodesh. So Chibat HaKodesh, if it's enough to turn ketoret into food, it certainly is enough to turn unhechshered with mayim motzer into food, is it not? So Elodis Kasher b'Chibat HaKodesh. Now, here's where we run into another serious question. What exactly does Chibat HaKodesh achieve? And this was a big standing question, as we'll see in a moment, that we had never found a real solution to. Namely, is Chibas HaKodesh a standard type of Kabbalah's Tumah for Ochlin? Standard type means, remember, we were Machalik when it comes to Tumah. There's the level of the Chumrah of the Tumah, and then there's the level of the status of the Tumah. Namely, is it A, or 1, or 2, or 3, in terms of Revi, Rishon, Shlishi, or Avatum, and so on. Those things were not necessarily related, as we discovered, with the idea of Mashkin, that can be Metame as a Tomei Mace. They could even be an Avatum, but the Shaila would be, they still can't be Metame Kalin. So in other words, they may have Rishon, Sheni, Shlishi that will come from them. They don't have the Chumrah of the Yav. How about over here by Chibas HaKodesh? Maybe exactly the opposite. They may have a Chumrah of Tumah, but they may not be able to pass that Tumah on. And that would mean, if you are telling me that Rebbe Hanina's kind of calling him second edus over here about the Basar that was in contact with the needle that was Tumah. And we said over there, that it's tummy. We didn't say that it's possible. We said it's tummy. If it's tummy, that means that it's going to be metame, can be metame other things, not kalim and not the hands of the coin. Okay, I understand that, but it will still be metame. That's a regular mashkin. So then you are saying that psule, something that is actually tummy from Chibas HaKodesh, is really tummy. And it can be counted as Rishon Vesheni. But I thought that the only thing we had established, I thought that the only thing that we knew for sure about Chibas HaKodesh is that they themselves become posel. But never, lamimne be rishon v'sheni nami. Now you're telling me that we can even use them to continue being metame other things because it says over here that they're tame. I thought that the idea of Chibas HaKodesh is that it defines the status of the kachim, but not that it throws it back into the world of Tumah V'Taira the way that normal meat would be. If that is the case, now we finally do have a raya for this question that's been hanging over us for decades. Nobody ever had an answer. Here's your answer. The only way that we've understood the case of Chanina's Kana Kohanim was that it became Tumah B'Chibas HaKodesh. So then Reish Lakish's famous question, namely, Tzorichel Minachot, suppose you have a carbon mincha that was not mixed well with oil. And now you've got like a lump of flour, essentially, of solet. If it becomes tummy, and the only way it could become tummy would be through Chibas HaKodesh, because it itself was never exposed to liquid. So then what would be the din? Asked Reish Lakish. Monin bo rishon v'sheni o lo. Does that Chibas HaKodesh allow us to make other things tummy? Which is essentially the question that we're dealing with over here. And you said the only possible way that this basar could have become tummy, according to Chanina Skana Kohanim, was if it was Mukshar b'Chibas HaKodesh, and it's not puzzle. It is actually tummy. Here's your solution. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. It's not a solution. What, you think we're the only smart ones? Everybody knew this. The reason that nobody brought a raya from here is because it's an obvious solution that has nothing to do with Chibas HaKadosh. Why don't we say it's talking about the norm? The norm is if a guy is bringing a carbon shlamim, since he is the one that is going to be benefiting as the owner from the skin and the actual meat, the steaks of that carbon, he's going to take good care of them. So what he would normally do, as we've seen many times before, in order to facilitate the skinning of the carbon, which is good both for the preservation of the integrity of the steaks that he's going to be making out of it, and for the integrity of the ore to make it easier to pull off without tearing, what he does is he makes certain that the animal drinks, and the additional hydration before the shechita makes it easier to do the skinning. So how do you make sure that the animal drinks? So what they do is they would go through on their way up to Yerushalayim. They would pass through water streams, which would force the animal to walk through the water. And as we know from toilet training our kids, that's a great way to get a kid to actually do something. Well, over here, it's a great way to get an animal to take a drink. So that's what they would do. But that would mean that they're still dripping wet from having passed through the water when they come into the Beis HaMikdash. And that's what happened. So Amar Rav Yehuda ben Shmuel, Shaitah Parasha Zivchei Shlamim, and Evi Rabbi Nahar on the way in, and the Shechita was done while it was still dripping a little, could be just one drop. Then while we were doing the skinning, it fell off onto the steak, and that would make it tummy, fine. It'd make it mukshar, and that would allow it to be Bekabel Tumah from the Machat. Now, the next continuation of that was, suppose, however, the needle was found in the perish of the animal. So now it's in the stomach contents, and it's in the excrement, basically. Then everything is tar. Why is that? Because, I mean, we're assuming now that if this animal just drank, and that's the case that we said, so then that means that there's a lot of liquid in the stomach contents. So why doesn't that itself, mashkin, would be mitame ochlin, and it should be mitame directly. Omrevada barava, we're talking about over here, perish avah, we're talking about thick stomach contents. That's not considered to be mashka. Ravashi says, I don't give a hang what the stomach contents are, for God's sake, as I explained before. A mashka saruach is not a mashka, not legabe bekabel tumah itself, and not legabe hechsher. So something which is disgusting is not considered to be mashka. The lashon of mashka is asher b'chol mashka asher yishateh. You show me somebody's going to drink this stuff, man. So therefore, it's not going to be mashka lekabel tumah. Tani tana kamei Rav Sheshes. So there was this brisa that attempted to show the full scale of how many steps we could possibly take in one thing being metame another thing. And he says this in front of Rav Sheshes. Now, this is a very beautiful sum up of the entire sugya and the different sheets that we've been talking about. So let's talk actually about the details of this thing. So he's going to give you a case where we get to the maximum level of tumah. Okay, so here's my case. A sheretz was metame mashkin. These mashkin, now we know that. How do we know that? Well, we know that from the Kal Vachomer. If the sheretz was metame the kli, which is the case mentioned in the Torah, all of the mashkin in the kli become tame, so obviously the mashkin that come directly into contact with the sheretz are considered to be tame, right? That was one of the earlier Kal Vachomers that we had. So the mashkin and mekabel tumah, fine. In this case, those mashkin turned around and they were metame a kli. How could mashkin be metame a kli? Well, there's two possibilities. One possibility is we're talking about the Rabbanan, but what we're talking about over here is actually mashkin and metame a kli according to Rabbi Yehuda before Rabbi Yehuda had charata. So you remember that Rabbi Yehuda's drasha of the famous pasuk that has been giving us so much of this data. It's an incredible pasuk. It's like one short pasuk, out of which we learn all of the dinim of the various levels of tumah, the different things are makabel tumah, the fact that one thing isn't matam at the same time. It's really amazing how much could be learned from that simple pasuk. Mikol ha'ochel asher ya'achel asher nafal alav mayim, right? Mikol ha'mashka asher yishateh, b'chol keli yitman, the double lashon of yitman. Every single diyuk has come from one little pasuk. It's astounding. But anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda said, since it says in the pasuk kol ha'mashkeh asher yishateh b'chol kli, and he understood that to mean kol ha'mashkeh asher yishateh b'chol kli yitma, it can even be metame the kelim. That was Rabbi Yehuda's drasha. Afterwards, remember at Chavrata, but this is going, I'll leave it to Rabbi Yehuda initially. Okay, so now look what we've done. We've taken mashkeh who's mekabel tumah from a sheretz, and we've used it to be metame as hakli, and then the kli can be used to be metame ochlin, because it says bikol ochel asher yachel, and then we darshan yitma to mean yitame, which means the ochlin are metame as hamashkin. Oh my gosh, which gives us really four different levels of tuma, right? Because I mean, after all, we started off with a sheretz, but then out of that sheretz came mashkin, kli, Eichlin, and Mashkin, which is four post-sheretz. Now, for some inexplicable reason, the Tana continued and said, V'lamadnu shalosh tumot b'sheretz. And therefore, we have learned three levels of tumah that could come out of sheretz, which is obviously ridiculous. We just learned four. Now, the truth is that this is not meaningful, because the case is ridiculous. Remember when Rabbi Yehuda said that the yitma, on asher yishateh b'chol kli yitma, what was he referring to? He was referring to the case given in the Torah of a kli cheres where a sheretz fell into the kli cheres, right? How can you, after deciding that a kli, which is a rishon betuma, having touched a sheretz, is capable of being metame these mashkin, how in the world are you going to learn out that the mashkin that are metame the kli, then the kli could be metame the mashkin to be metame a kli? I mean, you've added an additional level that you have no right to add. That's not the case. The case given was sheretz kli, and then the mashka is tame. Not sheretz mashkin kli, and then the mashkin is tame, right? So anyway, something is messed up about this limud, because we never had a case like this. Not to mention the fact that the number of steps that you've had are not correct, because nobody ever said that we could derive a revi b'kodesh. And what you've done over here is you've said, okay, the mashke was batami the kli, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, the mashkin was what? The kli was a rishon. Mashkin was a sheni. Now you're going to say that that means that the sheni can go ahead and be metame a shlishi, the mashkin, which can then be metame a revi. And that would mean that we learn out revi b'chulin. Nobody said that. Even Rabbi Akiva didn't say that. So the logical inconsistency of the limud is basically what we need to fix in order for the whole brisa to start fitting together, and then to say, so we learn out three steps and not four steps, and therefore, we've got a mistake. But since there's a mismatch between the Tana's statement of three and the actual case of four, let's decide where we're going to perform surgery and take out one of the cases, okay? Says the Gemara, of course, it's difficult for the Gemara to say this without a Hanukkah gift of a smile from La, but there we go. Says the Gemara that the question over here is obviously built around the wrong case. You said, Hani Arba'ah, I understand. You say three and then you give us four. Okay, cut out that first case. The first case is ridiculous. Goes Mashkin Dereisha. I understand. Why goes Mashkin Dereisha? I mean, the Mashkin of the Reisha, the first case of the Mashkin was the Mashkin of Batami the Kli after being Makabal Tuma from the Sheretz. And that is true. So why should I take off that case? I mean, I was trying to make it work out according to Rabbi Yehuda, and now you're insisting, nah, throw him out. What? What a throw him out? I thought that was the whole point, no? I mean, Adarabba, let's take out the Mashkin of the Seifa. No. Nobody holds. Listen, guys. Right? The only one who holds the Mashkin be Matamikli even in the first place is Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda had charata. Okay? So it does it make sense to make this crazy case, in which case we would be coming out with a Revi Bechulin, when we know nobody holds that, and we know in the end that in fact Rabbi Yehuda had charata. So I say, take out the first mashka, make it a standard case. Kli was mit tamei from a sheretz, so it goes, sheretz, kli, mashka, ochel. Or it could be sheretz, kli, ochel, mashka. That part doesn't bother me because the yitma appears in both cases, but I'll choose one of them. Okay, so therefore I say, leave in the last mashka, take out the first mashka. And the truth is, the siman to remember how to properly learn this is a keg of beer. There you go. So all you need to do is remember a keg of beer, and everything will be clear to you after you finish drinking it, maybe. But the truth is that the keg of beer over here means to make the beer in the first place. So if you make the beer in the first place, you first have the kli, and then you put in the ochlin into the kli, and then you go ahead and you add the water into the kli. So that's what we're saying. If you go in that order, then you will understand the case, okay? Kli, ochel, mashka, just like beer making. Okay, great. All right, so now getting back to the actual halacha that we've talked about many times, we never got to the Gemara that shows it to us. And that was the other incredible information that we learn out from this pasuk, which is it is so incredibly poetic that in being able to say this simple case, look at the level that we're able to learn out from. So again, we introduce the thing by asking what we might have thought if it wouldn't have been for the way this pasuk was constructed. So let's ask, as if we don't know, why don't we view this as being full of tumah? So now it says in the Mishnah, sheretz shenimtza b'tanur. Let's talk about the simple case in the pasuk. You find a sheretz in a tanur, which is made out of cheres. So what is the din of the bread in that tanur that never came into contact directly with the sheretz? The bread is a sheni betuma, because the cheres was a kli that was bekabel tuma from an av, and therefore it becomes a rishon, and now it re-radiates, and I remember radiation is not the real understanding of the dinim inside of the kli cheres. It's not the same. There is a din of radiation by Tumas Meis, which is called Ma'ahil, or by Tumar Ritzutza. There's a din of real radiation, and that real radiation, as Gavi has used the word, can also tunnel through things, right? That's not what's happening over here. This is something that is more sophisticated than that idea. And again, when it comes to a Meis, we have two concepts. We have one concept of the Ohel HaTuma, in which the entire house becomes filled with tumah. And then we talk about needing a pesach of an oil, of a tefach, in order for the tumah to pass through it and so on. That's not talking about radiated tumah. That's talking about spreading tumah. Then we have radiating tumah, which does not need a petach, as we just had in Olot, in the latest Mishnayos in Olot, does not need a petach of a tefach in order to get out of. Radiation will pass through anything. It'll go straight through, and that is the din of Tumah Ritzutza, or the cases of Ma'ahil. We have to be directly above the Tumah, under the Tumah, and then it will radiate through you and will be metame you. But here we're talking about a different concept. The different concept is a Tumah that affects space as a field, not as radiation. So therefore, the question over here is, being in that space is not in any way necessarily going to be metameyu. It's only metameyu if the space is itself not filled with tame, but brings you into the tuma because of the spatial constraints. That's a whole new idea. So now that kli, which contains that space, is tame because it contains that space. The things inside of that space are tame because they're included in the kli space, not because they're in the original space. You understand? So what that means is that the sheretz, was matame the kli that contained the space, and then the kli turns around and was matame things that are contained in its space, and therefore there was, by definition, an attenuation. Nothing like tumas meis. Ask the Gemara, how do you know that? I mean, that's like an extremely sophisticated idea. Why not just say it's similar to ideas that we had before? There's a body in a room. Everything in the room becomes tame. Same thing over here. There's a sheretz in a kli. Everything in the kli becomes tame. It seems very simple to me. And if, in fact, everything in that kli would become tame, then what level of tumah would there be for the bread? The bread would be a rishon because it would be as if it came into contact with the sheretz. The same way that if something is in a bias in which there's a mace, it's as if it came into contact with the mace. So why do we say that the bread is only a sheni? That's the fundamental question. So Rav Adamar Rava asks Rava, why? Why don't we view this entire tanur, kemandamali tuma damya? It's as if it's filled with tuma, and this pot should be a rishon latuma because for all intents and purposes, it touched the sheretz directly. Omale, no way, Jose. And the reason that it's no way is another implication of the pasuk that teaches us so much. And that is, as the Braita points out, Yocho, you kol hakelim itami me'avir kli cheres. Look, basically your question boils down to this question. Suppose there's a tea kettle inside of this tanur, and it's a tea kettle that's made out of metal, which is mekabel tuma normally from its surface, its outside surface. Will that tea kettle be tame or not? Now, that we know, that is going to be exactly this question. Because if the sheretz would have touched the tea kettle on the outside, then the tea kettle would be tame. That's given from the very fact that the kli over here, the tanner is mekabel tuma from a sheretz. So why wouldn't a tea kettle be mekabel tuma from a sheretz? In which case, if the entire tanur was filled with sheretz in terms of the halacha, and this would not be a spatial din, but would be a radiation din, so, or a filling of tuma din, either way, then if there was a tea kettle inside of the oven, the tea kettle would become tame. So you might think that, in fact, the tea kettle should become tame. Therefore, take a look at what the pasuk says. Kol asher b'tocho yitma, mikol ha'ochel, and so on. That means that only ochlin and only mashkin are mekabel tuma from inside of a kli cheres, but kol hakelim are not metamim me'avir kli cheres. Now that leads to two inescapable conclusions. A, it must be that there was an attenuation, which means that we don't view it as if the thing is mole tuma, because then there would be no possible way of distinguishing between the kli itself and the kli that's inside of it. They both came in contact with the sheretz. So therefore, we understand that there's a new concept called spatial tuma, but it teaches us something else. That once there is that attenuation, kelim cannot become tame. This is the entire source of the halacha that kelim are not mekabel tuma from a vlada tuma. They're only mekabel tuma from an abba tuma. Can you imagine? All these things that we take for granted are just like studying the case that's given for the yitma. Oh, come on, guys. This is unbelievable. Man, oh, man. So La has to check out now? So we Badavka can't get a smile? Sheesh. Okay. Anyway, so this is what we've derived from here. Rav Chista Rami Pisra Pisra Mishani. Now, we are finally going to get the rundown of all of the different ways that we started Rabbi Hanina's Kanakani. And the thing that was most confusing to us was that we had heard the mentioning of the machlokas of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer that Rabbi Yossi made in the Mishnah. We had no idea why he's bringing that in since nobody else spoke about it. Reish Lakish came along and said, what do you mean nobody else spoke about it? That's exactly what Rabbi Meir's Raya was. Meanwhile, we found all sorts of contradictions that we never resolved. I kept promising you we're going to be getting to that. Did Rabbi Yeshua allow you to be metame truma tluya with the tebeah or not? So we found contradictions in that, and we found contradictions in Rabbi Yeshua's din that you're not allowed to do anything directly to be metame truma, even if it's tluya. All you could do is open it up and hope that a sheretz gets in and dies on it. I mean, but he never said you can actually do it via dying. So we had all these contradictions, and we had the various factors that we threw in and that was that one of the cases of Rabbi Yeshua where the Truma was leaking down into the Chulin. Then there was the additional problem of Hefsed, the difference between Hefsed Meruba, Hefsed Shena Meruba. Is there a din of Shmira on Truma that's going to be lost anyway? We were never able to really make all of the sugyas fit. Now we're going to make them all fit by pointing out every single contradiction that seems to have hit us along the way in understanding Rabbi Yehoshua. So Rav Chisda points out the first apparent contradiction, and that is there were two dinim of Rabbi Yehoshua that had to do with Pesach, okay? And he wanted us to understand why they're not contradictory. On one hand, Rabbi Yehoshua said that you are supposedly allowed to burn Truma Teluya together with Truma that is Vaday Tameh on Erev Pesach. That's what it says in the Mishnah. And Rabbi Yossi said that. Well, he was only Mater burning the Teluya with a Tameya, but where did he ever say you could take Truma that was really Torah Midiraisa? Vraminu, is that true? And what do you do with the following Braisa? Amar Rabbi Yossi. Now, this is all a review of things that we've learned before. Excuse me, Rabbi Meir, but burning Torah Chometz and Truma together with Truma Tameya on Erev Pesach is not similar to the cases that you brought. Because Kishayidu Rabotenu Amaheidu. What was Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Hanina's Kana Kohanim talking about? If they were talking about a busser that was Tameh with a Vlada Tuma, and therefore you could burn that together with Batsar that was with a Nitma Ba'ava Tuma, what does that have to do with the case of burning Truma that's Tor with Truma that's Tameh? Zetameh v'zetameh over here, you're burning Truma Torah. Sorry, that doesn't fit, okay? Imala Shemen, Shenifsal Betvuyom. How about Rabbi Akiva's case? That also doesn't fit. Because that, what, you're allowed to be Madlikin in a Ner Shenitma Betameh Meis? That was Pusel, and this is Tameh. Okay, but you're talking about something that's Tahar. It's not Potsel, it's not Tameh. How do you derive that? And that is certainly does not follow. So now, that is no Raya. And if you try to claim that it's the same thing, I will show you that it's not. Because I'm also Meida. Now, this is very important to remember, because here he's saying he's Meida about something he doesn't seem to be Meida. Afanumodim, look, we all agree that Truma, that is actually Tameh, Bivlad HaTuma, you could burn that together with Truma, that is Nitma, together with an Avad Tuma, because there you're adding to Tuma. That I agree with. I do not understand how you're about to go out and you're going to burn Truma Teluya together with Tameya, and you're going to say, well, what do I have to watch it for? What do you mean, what do you have to watch it for? And what happens if Elio comes along and he says, this is perfectly kosher Truma, it never touched any Tuma, and then you're going to be burning Truma that's Tahar? You cannot do that. And nobody would do you. What do you mean nobody would let you do that? In the Mishnah, as opposed to the Braisa, he says beferish that Rabbi Yehoshua does allow that. You can burn the Teluya im HaTameya. And he didn't say Shema Yavo Elio V'Yitarem. Am I missing something here? Said Rav Chisda, you're not missing anything. It's just that there happen to be two very different approaches to Rabbi Yehoshua. You are talking about Rabbi Yossi's approach. And actually, Rabbi Yehoshua has a different approach, which is Rabbi Shimon. Ha Rabbi Yossi, Ali B'de Rabbi Yehoshua. So in the Braisa over here, that's going according to Rabbi Yossi, which, according to which, Rabbi Yehoshua was never matir burning Teluya together with the Tameya. It's Rabbi Shimon who says that Rabbi Yehoshua was matir Teluya ima Tameya. And I'll show you, it's a Braita, that there are two different approaches. In the case, says the Braisa, where Erev Pesach falls out on a Shabbos, then the halacha is that you've got to burn everything before Shabbos, right? This is what we learned before. You burn Truma, which is Tameh, Truma, which is Toluy, Truma, which is Tar, all together, says Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yossi says, no, you can't do that. You have to burn Tahira in one pyre, and then you burn the Teluya in another pyre, and you burn Tameya in another pyre. Can't do it. I'm Rabbi Shimon. Well, lo nechlu Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shua ala Tahora va'ala Tameya, or ala Teluya va'al HaTahora. In those cases, you can. There was never a question, because Truma Teluya is not defined as Tame. And anybody seeing you as burning it with Tahar is not looking at it as if you were Metame, the Tahar from the Teluya, because it still has its Chazaka. Alma Nechlaku, Ala Teluya Va Ala Tameya. Rabbi Eliezer says you have to keep Teluya and Tameya separately. And Rabbi Yoshua says you can burn them together. So in other words, Rabbi Yossi holds that you definitely cannot, even Alibet Rabbi Yoshua, cannot burn Teluya and Tameya together, which of course is a contradiction to the Mishnah, as we'll ask in a moment. And Rabbi Shimon says, according to Rabbi Yoshua, you can burn them together. So therefore, there's no contradiction. What? What is wrong with you? The Mishnah is Rabbi Yossi. The Mishnah is not Rabbi Shimon. The Mishnah says that Rabbi Yossi told Rabbi Meir that there's no way that he was matir burning Tame with Tahar. He was only matir burning Tolui with Tahar, the Tolui with Tame. So now how are you telling me that to Rabbi Shimon if Rabbi Yossi was quoting it to Rabbi Meir? How is that the answer? The Mishnah is Rabbi Yossi. No, no, no. Listen. The Mishnah was Rabbi Yossi, but it wasn't Rabbi Yossi saying what he was saying. Rabbi Yossi's trying to answer Rabbi Meir, right? So Rabbi Yossi says, look, Rabbi Meir, I don't care how far you want to go on this issue, okay? If you want to learn like Rabbi Shimon understood Rabbi Yeshua, go right ahead. Say something wrong, but you'd still be wrong. Because even if you hold of Rabbi Shimon's shot in Rabbi Yeshua, he never said you could take Tor and Tameh, did he? He only said you could take Tolu and Tom. And I don't think you could even do that, but that's my personal opinion. But if you want to say, I feel a Rabbi Shimon, I leave it to Rabbi Yoshua, and that's much more Mekel than me. He was never Mekel like you. Ki Mekel only betuluyo Tameya. But did he say Tahura with Tameya? Absolutely not. And that answers that problem. Now we have a deeper understanding of the Mishnah that it isn't Rabbi Yossi's personal opinion. We finally understand how Rabbi Yossi in that bright that was driving us crazy. If he said in the Mishnah that you could burn it together, and now he's yelling at Rabbi Meir in the bright and saying there's no such thing. You need a separate buyer for each one. And now we understand that. Now Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina pointed out a stira between the dinim of Truma in general with the dinim of Pesach Alibet Rabbi Yoshua. And that was the case where, accordingly, Rabbi Yoshua Paskin, that you can burn both Truma Tameya together, you can burn Teluya, and this is Erev Pesach, as it says in the Mishnah, you're allowed to do this together. And yet, how do we explain the fact, the other machlokas of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua, namely, if you have a barrel of wine of Truma, and you have a suffix tuma, which means that this is going to be truma teluya. That's exactly the case. Okay, did you just say that truma teluya, you're allowed to be matami biadayim? You said that. So how come over here the machlokas is only about whether you're allowed to leave it open? So Rabbi Eliezer omer, im hayta b'mokom haturpa, yanichene b'mokom hamutzna. So Rabbi Eliezer says, look, it still is a chiv of mishmeret. And therefore it says the Mishmer Trumotai includes even Truma that's Teluya. You have to take care of it. And therefore, if it was in a place where it was exposed, you've got to cover it up. If it didn't have a cover on the barrel, you have to put a cover on the barrel. Rabbi Yoshua says, on the contrary, once it's already in a matzav of Teluya and you're not able to eat it, so then if it was in a nice area where no one will get to it, take it outside and put it where someone will find it and mess it up. If it had a cover on the barrel, take the cover off and let a sheretz fall in and drop dead in there. I don't care, because it's not roy. Okay, but he never said you could actually be matame. He said you can put it into a position where it would more likely become tummy. That's called a grumma. So he's allowing you to do a grumma. So how the heck did he allow you here on Erev Pesach to do it biyadayim? That doesn't make any sense. Now, obviously, this is a weird kind of question, right? What do you mean it doesn't make any sense? Here we're talking about an Erev Pesach. And an Erev Pesach, anyway, you're going to be burning it. So I thought, wasn't that the whole point that Rabbi Meir was making? So maybe that's the difference over here also. But the point over here is that Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, who points out that we have a stira over here, he doesn't buy into that because he says, look, if the reason for the kula over here is because it's Erev Pesach, then basically what would he be saying? He would be saying that it must be that there is no Isser of violating Mishmeret on something that anyway can't be eaten, right? Because if Lamaise was because of the fact that we're going to be burning it up, and that is there's nothing that I have to worry about, then why can't I even burn Truma Tohar with the tummy? Should be exactly the same. So obviously he's taking into consideration the fact that it's Toloi, only because it's Toloi. And therefore, because otherwise he'd be agreeing with Rebbe Meir. That is what Rebbe Meir says, but it's not what he's saying. So he's saying, if that's the case, it must be that there still is an Isra on doing it via Dayim. So then how do you explain that it's different on Erev Pesach? And he answers, it isn't different. It's two different Shitas. Rebbe Shimon, I'll leave it to Rebbe Yeshua. In the Mishnah, it's talking about Rebbe Shimon, I'll leave it to Rebbe Yeshua. And this, as we just said, is the halach according to him, but Rabbi Yossi, I'll leave it to Rabbi Yeshua. Because according to Rabbi Yoshua, remember, Rabbi Shimon holds you're allowed to actually be mitame tuluya, even be a daim. So according to him, you'd be allowed to burn it together. Rabbi Yossi holds you cannot. You can only be gorem it. Okay, that is Rabbi Yossi shita indeed. Like he said before, he said you cannot put it to even tuluya together with the tmeya sorein achinami. Then there's no contradiction. Now, there's another contradiction. Rabbi Elazar points out a contradiction. That's a contradiction in the dinim of Tuma directly. Did Rabbi Yoshua say that in the case that you found Truma Teluya, you can only leave it open, but you cannot do any Tuma B'Yadayim? What do we do about the other case that we spoke before, I'll leave it to Rabbi Yoshua, where we had the Chavish al Truma, and it broke. And there it was in the upper part of the gat, where you were going to you press the wine, and down at the bottom, you've got $10,000 worth of chulin. And that chulin is tamei, which is fine. I mean, you sell it to people who don't care about whether it's tamei or tar. But if that broken barrel, which is now leaking, is going to release truma into that bottom vat, you're in big trouble. Because then nobody can drink that wine. Cohen can't drink it because it's truma tamei. Yisrael can't drink it because it's truma, even it wouldn't be tamei. So there's nothing to do with it. You're going to be losing all of that money. So there it says, Moda Rebbe Eliezer Rebbe Yoshua, that if you're capable, remember we had all this before, if you're capable of saving one pitcherful, even one revius, betaira, except that in order to get that pitcher, you're going to have to run into the house, look around, find the pitcher and come back. And meanwhile, half of that dripping wine is going to be falling into the chulin and killing it. There's nothing to do. You have to let it drip in. But if not, that's where we have a machloka. Suppose you don't have any option. So the only thing you could do, you've got lots of tamei kelim, so you'd be able to catch all of the truma that's dripping out of this barrel into kelim that are tamei, but you just don't have anything tor to save it into. Can you save it and thereby be mitame the truma be a daim? Or must you allow the truma to fall into the lower vat and become tame all on its own and destroy all of that valuable wine? That's the question. So that's the machlokas. Rebbe Eliezer says there's nothing to do. You're not allowed to be mitame be a daim. You simply have to let it take the natural course. It will flow into the lower vat, mix with the chulin, and wreck everything. But you still are not allowed to be metamet b'yad because the din of mishmeres still seems to apply. Now, we're going to see that obviously there may be a din of mishmeres min yirais or min rabbanan, but we'll talk about that in a moment. Rabbi Yoshua says, no, you can even be metamet it b'yadayim. Now, I don't understand. Before you said that if the truma was tluya, the most you could do is you can leave it open, but you can't be metamet b'yadayim. So now why did he change his mind? And Rebbe Lazar explains exactly the issue that we had before. It's different because over here you're going to be suffering a significant loss. And in suffering that loss, indeed, Rebbe Yoshua is matir. Because even though he did say you can't be metame b'yadayim in the case of the Tuluya, that was not because of a deoraisa mishmeres. It was because the Rabbanan made a gezera not to do things b'yadayim. Because that is too much of a zilzal in the concept of mishmeres. But there really is not a din of mishmer truma tayon truma that anyway is useless. So that explains it. And of course, Rava asked the same question we had before. If it's true that we're worried about Hefzid in the Mishnah, we also have Hefzid because you're going to have to buy separate wood in order to make a Sreif of the Chometz. And even so, Rabbi Yossi says that according to Rabbi Yeshua, you can't do that. How do you explain that? And Abaye explained it. That la Hefzid meruba chashashu, la Hefzid muat lo chashashu. Now, before, we just accepted that as a very reasonable distinction between the two cases of the Hefzid of the chulin in the wine vat and the Hefzid of a couple pieces of wood to make an additional pyre to burn your chametz. But now we want proof. Show me that indeed the halacha is that you are mechalek between Hefzid meruba and Hefzid Muad over here, according to Rabbi Yeshua. And we have a brilliant proof. Says Abai, I'll prove it to you. I'll prove it from this same sugya. Because look, Mina Tamer the Hefzid Meruba Chashu, Hefzid Muad Lo Chashu. There's another braita. And the other braita, if you don't have enough understanding, seems to be word for word the same as the braita that we had before, except for one little word. And for some reason, Rabbi Yoshua changes his mind about the din in this brisa, which is weird. Why is that? Aha. So take a look at this brisa. You have a chavit shel shemen truma shenishpara begata el yona. Aha. It's the same. Everything is the same. The only difference is over here that the barrel that cracked contains oil. And in the previous case, the barrel that cracked contained wine. Right? Okay, big deal. And now the oil is leaking down. And in the bottom of the press is chulin tamim, very expensive, possible loss of all of this oil. Oh my God. So again, the braita follows the other braita. Moda Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua, Shim Yocholat Silmi Mener Avias Betara Yatzil. And Imlav, but what about if not in this case? Nobody argues. You can't do a darn thing. You have to let it go and be mitame. What? Va'al yitameno biyad? So that means Rabbi Yoshua now says that you cannot be mitame the truma. And before he said you can be mitame the truma, everything was the same except one word. Shemen versus yayin. I mean, shemen is very expensive. You're going to be ruining all of this oil? The answer is, of course, you're not really totally ruining all of that oil, because what you're doing is you're making the oil tame. But when oil is tame, it can still be used for fueling all your lamps for the year, right? So you'll be burning the shemen sreifa, and that way there will not be a loss. I mean, there'll be a loss, but it won't be as big a loss percentage-wise as the loss of the iron. So Mishnah Shemen, explain to me, something about oil means that Rabbi Yoshua does not allow you to be mitame biyadayim. Why? Because even after it mixes with the oil that's tame, you can still use it for hadlaka. That's the proof that it is considered to be a less of a loss, and Rabbi Yoshua was not matir for less loss. He was only matir for major loss. But the problem is that wine is also usable when it's tame. Because when you don't have those nice, pretty spray bottles that are filled with all kinds of chemicals to use around your house, they used to have nice, pretty bottles that were filled with yummy-smelling wine right around your house. So you can use it as a room deodorant, okay? So why do you say it's useless? It's not useless. And maybe you'll say, ah, come on, room deodorant. I mean, that's like going down in value, I mean, 98%, right? I mean, that's a major loss. You're wrong. You know what Shmuel quoted Reb Chiya saying? If you can't afford expensive wine and you got to make a choice of what to drink and what to spray, buy lousy wine, which costs a luk per sella if you got to drink it. But for your room deodorant, buy wine that's twice as expensive and use it as a room deodorant. Okay, so what does that show? That shows that it's not a big loss as you thought. It's the same percentage loss as it would have been with the shemen. So it's still a contradiction now. How do you explain the difference? Oh, boy, that's a problem. Answers the Gemara, maybe we're talking about grape juice. Grape juice doesn't smell good as a room deodorant. So over there, it would be a complete hefset. Because what am I going to do with grape juice that I can't drink? Last I heard, grape juice can be fermented and turned into yummy wine. As a matter of fact, I think most wines once upon a time were grape juice. If you don't believe that, then you don't believe in childhood. So what are you saying? So keep it around and turn it into wine. I don't understand what the big deal is. Now there we get an explanation. It takes time to turn grape juice into wine. During that time, what is to prevent someone who didn't realize that it was Truma Tumea from drinking it? So it's likely to be a tacola for people. Therefore, you got to get rid of it. I understand. And the oil? What, am I able to burn the oil like all in the next 10 minutes? I mean, I'm going to be burning it over the course of the next few months. So somebody's going to come, undoubtedly, and use it for salad oil. So I understand the same problem with tacola, no? If you're worried about tacola is the issue. No, the shemen you can put into some type of kli ma'us. You put it into a used kli cheres that makes it ichi, and then nobody wants to use it for salad. So it's not a problem. Okay, I could do that for wine too, can I? I put it into a kli ma'us. What are you, crazy? We're using the wine for spraying. The wine for spraying has got to maintain its good smell. You're going to put it into a stinky vessel. Pluck. Who's going to be able to use it now for a room deodorant? So obviously there you don't have the option, the option of handling the wine over a long time. Somebody's going to drink it because you could need to keep it in a clean kleem. Asha Inken, when it comes to the oil, you don't care what the oil doesn't smell. You're putting it into a lamp to burn. It's not worse than kerosene, is it? So, Lazilov Kabayle, Beklimos, Romile, I understand you just spent double the amount of money on the best wine in order to be able to use it for Zilov, and now you're going to smell it up by putting it into Klimos? That's crazy. Now, Lamaisa, this introduces yet another issue, which is Takala. And the truth is that Takala Atzma, whether we're choshish for Takala, is a machlokes tanoim, the Tanya. Chavit shel yayin shel truma shenitme. So now you've got this big wine barrel. It's all tamei. Beit Shammai says, pour the whole thing out. Tishapei chaval. It should be poured out like a chavilah. Chaval means like a chavilah. Don't keep any of it. Just pour it all out in the toilet. Beit Hillel omrim. Wait a minute over here. That's valuable wine, baby. Put it into a spray can and spray it. And Teah says, ziluf. Omar Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, well, I know I will give you the kachra'ah. So I'm going to be the tipping point over here by adding the weight of my opinion on one hand to Beit Shammai and on one hand to Beit Hillel. I would say like this. If you're outdoors, then you're not going to use it as a room spray. You don't have enough. Only China has enough. All right. So if you're out in the field, then pour it all out because you can't spray it. But if you're in the house, then you can use it as zilof. Or there was another sheet. What Reb Shmuel Reb Yossi said was, if it's grape juice and it's going to take a long time to, so then pour it all out, like Beit Shammai said. And if it's old wine, it's really good wine at this point, then don't pour it out. Use it for zilof. And the Chachamim said to him, like we saw before, that is not called ani achria adoni yanechbad. That is making up some new factor, which neither Beit Hillel nor Beit Shammai mentioned. And therefore, you are not midway between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. You're a completely new third opinion, right? In this case, nobody spoke about that issue at all.